The world is off its axis. Scraby has won the Fantabulous Sports Game Show today. Welcome back into Gwen and Chris. Hour number two of our Tuesday get-together. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. down at Petco Park, where he is getting prepared for tonight's. I believe he's back on TV again this evening with Don Orsillo.
Yeah, the next two.
Don Orsillo gets funnier and funnier, by the way.
Mm-hmm. He's always funny. Yeah.
Nah, but he's getting funnier. That's what I mean. I think he's great. And last night, Tony Gwynn Jr. provided some analysis, and Don Orsillo said, "Boy, nice having a color analyst who actually provides analysis from time to time." He was getting a shot in on our old friend Mark Grant.
I do love when Don takes shots at Mark when he's gone. It's great. It's hilarious.
Gets a quick shot in. Mark can do the same when Don is not there. So I really think we're lucky on our broadcast. Not saying that just to say it. I know a lot of people, not a lot, but there are some people who think that, you know, they want nothing but hardcore strike one, ball one, strike two, ground ball, description of every single play for an entire 27 outs, 54 on both sides, 162 game season. And I just don't think baseball lends itself to that. I think as long as you're, you know, keeping us apprised of what's going on in the ball game, which they do, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a little fun during the broadcast. Jesse and Tony do the same thing on radio. Honestly, I find it all refreshing, and I find it all almost necessary to make it through. I mean, if you're going to take every game like it's the seventh game of the World Series as a broadcaster, you're never going to make it, and it's going to be exhausting to your listeners.
I watch a lot of MLB TV, so I go around to the different TV broadcasts. I actually really like listening and seeing what's around.
Yeah, seeing what else is around. And don't wish for something else, because we're pretty good here.
Yeah,
lucky.
Yeah, there are some that are just like, what is going on during this game? These guys, I don't even know what they're talking about. Like, I was watching the Tigers game, the Tigers broadcast earlier, which has Jason Benetti. He's great, but the guy who was with him, I can't remember his name, Monroe, he was a former player, former Tiger, but he just kept making jokes the entire time, and I'm all for jokes, but there's a time and a place for a joke, I think.
How about a riddle?
You can give riddles whenever you want.
Is a riddle okay?
Yes, Craig Monroe, Adam is right. But anyway, I see a lot of these guys and Don.
We're lucky with what we have here.
And Jesse and Tony, I listen to a lot of radio as well.
We're lucky with what we have here. We really, truly are. Speaking of that Tiger game, the Cardinals rallied for a 2-1 win over the Tigers earlier here in the first of a doubleheader. Okay, riddle me this, Scraby. What is going on with all of these NBA injuries in the playoffs? It is piling up. Sources with the Celtics now say that Kristaps Porzingis, who left last night's game with an injury, is going to miss several games. He's got should I try to read what this is? He's got a right soleus strain. Or in layman's terms, his calf hurts. So he's out for a minimum of several games, according to sources. And the sources are telling that to Woj. So you can take it to the bank. Clippers already have ruled Kawhi Leonard out for Game 5 against the Mavericks. Luka Doncic has a knee sprain for Dallas. They're saying he's probable for Game 5, but no guarantee. Joel Embiid today missed the Sixers shoot-around with a migraine.
Mm.
That can be completely, totally, and utterly debilitating if somehow that doesn't clear up. The Knicks and Sixers play tonight. Philadelphia needs to win to keep its season alive. No word yet on whether Embiid will be able to play with the migraine forcing him out of the shoot-around. Heat rookie Jaime Jaquez is out for Game 5 with a hip injury. I'm only bringing this up because we've already got a bunch of other guys missing games.
Well, I know why.
And okay, I know what you're going to say. But
what?
Go ahead and
what?
Let me give you the form to say
what?
You think they're soft.
No, not necessarily.
You do.
I don't
you think they're soft.
They're not playing enough during the year.
They're not building enough.
They're building not building up enough. Yes.
Building up enough resistance
Correct.
To these injuries.
Correct.
You know, the NBA's got an issue because, I mean, these are superstar players and they're missing, you know, playoff games left and right. Last night, the Lakers, Anthony Davis got a stinger. I don't know if you saw that play.
I did not, no. Stingers hurt, though.
He bumped into Michael Porter Jr., looked very innocuous until Anthony Davis couldn't lift his arm up for about a quarter. That did not help the Lakers' cause, and they end up losing that ball game to the Nuggets on another miracle shot by Jamal Murray, who beats the Lakers twice in five games to win that series.
Oh, we never got into, while Tony was with us and we had time, the Denver Nuggets radio call. He texted Chris and I last night.
I did not hear it.
Do you want me to grab it?
Sure.
Okay. We can play it next segment, but...
Well, let's play it here. We'll put the gambit off. We're talking about this now. Tony was upset because the Denver Nugget radio guy was just totally homer.
Yes.
In the final minutes of the game.
Now, Tony apparently heard the full, like, 3 minutes of it.
Okay,
but
well, we're not going to play all that.
I need to find the actual...
I mean, the Lakers have really only themselves to blame for losing this game last night. They missed six free throws in the fourth quarter. And if you're going to knock out the defending NBA champs on their home floor, you just can't give away those points. And I thought that was ultimately what cost them. That and the fact that they just couldn't get the open three-point shots to go in. D'Angelo Russell just, you know, 2 for 10 is not going to get it done when they're leaving you wide open to shoot threes. And you need to knock them down, and he wasn't. You know, the Lakers gave it everything they had. AD was hurt. He played through it, 17 and 15 rebounds. Got to respect that. But ultimately, you know, Denver just has the Lakers' number. My goodness.
They do. They do.
I mean, they beat them 13 of the last 14 games, and they get the gentleman sweep.
All right. Here, I finally found it.
All right, so here's some of the late game broadcast, and supposedly this is just totally hometown announcing by Denver.
This is only like the 42 seconds, but yes, this is from 92.5 FM.
Did you hear this?
Denver. I did. And
is it bad?
It's slightly homerish, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I gotta say.
Let's hear it.
High right side is Jamal Murray, 9 on the shot clock. Denver looking for a game winner. Murray has it on the high right side. High pick from Jokic. Murray, jumper from 8. Got it again! 3.6 seconds left for the Lakers. LeBron over to Prince. Jumper's no good at the horn. And the LA Lakers can take that L on the way out. Along with that whistle, Denver takes care of La La Land for the second game in a row. Might be the best win I've ever seen. The Los Angeles Lakers and their free throws can go back to La La Land.
He's a little aggressive.
That is really aggressive. I'm not a Laker fan at all. I can understand why Tony would definitely feel some type of way. I'm assuming the Denver broadcaster there was whining about the fact that the Lakers had 27 free throw attempts to the Nuggets 9 last night.
When he said they could take their whistle home.
Take their whistle home to La La Land. I mean, he's basically calling out an entire city.
He really is.
That guy better be careful because unless he gets fired, he's going to have to come back to Los Angeles with the Nuggets next year. And I'm sure that these fans are going to hear about all this.
It's Mickey.
I got to tell you something. You only played 42 seconds.
Yeah.
Do you know the term sophomore?
Yes.
It basically means that you sound like a little kid.
Yeah.
It's not professional.
No, I agree.
What he did there is not professional. Number one. Number two. He did a disservice to his own team and franchise because instead of concentrating on Jamal Murray winning another series for the Denver Nuggets and them advancing back to the Western Conference semifinals in defense of their NBA championship and doing it in remarkable fashion for the second time in five games, he chose to basically complain about the officiating on a winning call.
I actually found more of the call, if you like.
I mean, like, how does that... Yeah, I want to hear a little bit more, honestly, now. But how does that go into the history books and the archives of the Denver Nuggets where you win a series over the Lakers for the second year in a row. First of all, he said the second game in a row, so he misspoke anyway. But they beat him for the second year in a row.
Wait, didn't he hit the last shot? Wasn't it second game in a row Jamal Murray did
no,
that?
No, he did it in game two. They lost game four.
Okay.
And then he did it again in game five. He meant to say that they beat the Lakers for the second year in a row. I don't know. That's bad. It's sophomoric broadcasting. Let me hear a little more.
Yeah, this is going to kind of pick up at the end of the last clip.
Air of La La Land for the second game in a row. Might be the best win I've ever seen. The Los Angeles Lakers and their free throws can go back to La La Land.
Now that spring is here.
What?
What, we got a commercial?
Sorry about that.
We're going to take a commercial break in the middle of that call.
I just clicked through a 10-minute clip, and they posted all 10
drives
minutes.
Drives in on them.
Anyway.
All right.
I've heard enough. I'm sorry about that, everybody.
The first segment was not a waste of time. That's really bad broadcasting. But like I said, you know, the Nuggets are the ones that have to pay for that because their fans had to hear it, and that's the memory they get to take with them.
The radio station that posted that is very excited about that call. They put it in quotes, and they said, listen to the whole final call.
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't be excited about it. And again, that's not coming from a disgruntled Laker fan because I'm not a Laker fan at all.
Yeah.
I am a fan of crediting Jamal Murray for a remarkable last-second shot that beats the Lakers for the second time in the series. And winning the series for the second year in a row and keeping alive your chances at a repeat, which is far more important than whining about the officiating after the game is over.
I agree.
All right.
I agree.
I heard a sounder. Sounds
yes.
like the Padres lineup has come in for tonight's ballgame.
It has, and it starts like this. Jurickson Profar leading off, playing left field. Fernando Tatis Jr. in right, batting second. Jake Cronenworth batting third, playing first. Manny Machado, DH. By the way, I just looked at Manny's average. It's at 252. That's a lot better than I would have thought it was. Anyway, Xander Bogaerts is hitting fifth, playing second base. Jackson Merrill is hitting sixth, playing center field. Campusano, seventh, catching. Ha-Seong Kim, eighth, shortstop. Tyler Wade, third base, ninth.
Yeah, Ha-Seong Kim is falling quickly in that lineup as the average continues to plummet. He keeps falling in that lineup. You mentioned Manny's average is better than you thought, but his OPS is
really low.
Just not Manny-like.
6.95.
Yeah, 8.27 is his career. It's 130 points. I mentioned Bogaerts. His career is 8.06. This year he's 5.73. And even Fernando, career 8.85, this year 7.47. And it's a small sample size, but all three of those guys were well below their career averages last year.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the Daily Gambit in a minute, but or in the next segment, but everybody wants to blame something right now. You know what? Put the blame on the biggest shoulders right now. Because that's where the blame lies the most.
And we're saying those shoulders are?
They belong to Fernando, Manny, and Bogaerts.
Yes.
And tonight they belong to Darvish.
I even think Jake Cronenworth is in there.
Jake is he's the next level of superstardom below those three guys.
But those are the guys who are being paid to carry this team.
Understood.
When they need them.
Jake has had his moments this year. I don't think the other guys really have even had their moments yet. And, you know, Darvish doesn't have a win. I know he's coming off the injured list. Tonight would be a hell of a night for the guy to throw six shutties and get a win because this team needs a boost, a lift, and they need somebody like a Darvish to give it to them. Or they need a first-inning two-run homer for Fernando. You know what I mean?
I do.
Something to get this turned. And you got to put the blame on the heaviest shoulders right now. They're making the most money. They are the superstars. And as you like to say,
superstars got a superstar.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Daily Gambit. When we come back, more Gwen and Chris on the way.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is breaking news from 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, we come back to the program with some very interesting stuff to report here. Gwen and Chris program, 3:21 the time. I'm going to let you read this one, Scraby, because it upsets you a lot more than it upsets me.
It didn't upset me, but...
Oh, you're upset.
Mike Trout...
Don't let him kid you.
...is going to be out for a short time. They don't really have any timetable. He has a torn meniscus, and he needs surgery to repair said meniscus.
Yeah, you said a short time. I don't think a short time is accurate. I think it's going to be quite a time. They are expecting him back by the end of the season. But a short time tells me he'd have surgery and be back in a week or two. I think it's going to be a month or two, maybe longer. Trout has not had a fully healthy season since 2018. This is why Scraby was celebrating
his downfall. I knew you were going to go that way. I'm not celebrating him being injured because
I want
him to
play. He's always hurt, man. I can't stand this guy.
He is, though. And even though Manny and Fernando and Xander are all having terrible starts.
You like them better because they're in they're posting.
They're posting. Availability.
Mike Trout last year, only 82 games. Mike Trout the year before that, 119. The year before that, only 36. Actually, he played most of the COVID season, 53 of the 60. And then you go back, 134, 140, 140. Anyway, it's been 2018. Last time he played pretty much a full season. Actually, 2019, last time he had 600 at-bats. So Trout, who leads the American League with 10 home runs, but does not lead the American League with 14 RBIs.
That's insane.
He's only hitting 220.
Is he leadoff?
No. He bats in the middle of a terrible lineup. But he's got 6 stolen bases. He even stole a base last night, and they said he had the injury last night. And they checked him out. Follow-up MRI revealed an issue with the knee. So Trout back under the knife. That's not... You know what? I'm not an angel guy. But that's just bad news for baseball.
It is.
He's a big-time star player. People tune in to watch him play. And you're right. He can't stay on the field.
He has been leading off, apparently.
Oh,
yeah.
But
recently. Okay. He hasn't stayed on the field, and I do feel for him because I know that he wants to be on the field. But at the same time, this is why when people say Mike Trout's the greatest player in the game, he can't play. He can't stay on the field.
He can't be the greatest player in the game if he's not playing. That's fair to say. All right, let's get to the Daily Gambit. Scraby, see what we got.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in the Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. We will get right to it because we have no time to waste.
Normal recovery time for torn meniscus repair. Surgery.
Yes.
You can expect it to take up to 3 months. And I hate to say, but Mike Trout normally is on the far end of that stuff. He doesn't get back sooner than you think. He comes back later than you think most of the time.
Well, that is unfortunate.
All right.
Brutus fan, Daily Gambit, will Trout get hurt over under 2 months into the season?
Yeah. Well, he didn't make 2 months.
The under.
Didn't make 2 months.
Wow. All right. First bet was the Celtics and the Miami Heat. Celtics were 10.5-point favorites. Both of us took the Heat thinking they would keep it close. They did not keep it close. They lost by 14 points. Celtics won 102-88.
Right.
Denver Nuggets, -6.5 over the Lakers. We both chose the Lakers thinking they would keep it close, and they did. They only lost by 2, so they win the bet, but Denver wins the game 108-106. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, He over under 27.5 points last night. You went over, I went under, and he went under with 24 points.
What were you thinking?
I just felt like it was an elimination game, right?
No, you got it right.
I know, but it was elimination.
Yeah.
Right? So I felt like the Thunder were just going to crush the Pelicans because...
They won comfortably, but it wasn't a crush.
No, it wasn't a crush. Who would score more last night? Jokic or LeBron James? You chose Jokic. I chose LeBron. And LeBron had 30 points. Jokic had 25 points.
Yep, LeBron with the win there.
Now, Reds-Padres total number of runs scored last night, over under 8. Both of us went over, and we were wrong. It was 7.
Hassan Kim gets a hit on that last at bat. Two runs score, and it goes over.
Get me started.
Came right down to the final.
Now, Nick Lodolo, over under 5.5 strikeouts was his total last night. Both of us went over, and both of us were right, because he had 11.
Yeah, they don't normally miss the odds by that much.
No.
But they did.
If you're looking at the NL MVP race real quick, Fernando Tatis Jr. is number 4 in the odds with plus 1,100. But there's a guy, Ellie De La Cruz, plus 1,300.
You like that one?
I don't necessarily know he's going to win the MVP, but I really like watching Ellie De La Cruz play.
Yeah, popped a home run last night. Did not steal a base. He also, in the ninth inning, threw the ball so hard to first base that the first baseman, Candelario, couldn't even get his glove up to catch it.
Yeah.
These are major league players. But that ball was, what'd you say, it was 106 miles per hour?
106.9
on the throw from shortstop.
Yeah.
I mean, he absolutely unleashed that throw, and Candelario reached his glove up, and it just, he couldn't catch it.
I can't imagine what it's like to catch that ball, because I've caught some baseballs before, you know, and it hits the hand and it really hurts. Can you imagine what a 107 mile an hour throw feels like, Chris?
I don't know, and neither does Candelario, because he didn't catch the ball.
Good point. Good point.
He did not catch the ball. All right, here we go for tonight. We have, I believe, let me see, I had it here. I got a lot of pieces of paper. If you watch on the YouTube, it's pretty comical once in a while to see me filing through pieces of paper. Here we go. Padres over the Reds by 1.5 tonight.
What?
Even though the Padres have lost 5 in a row and are playing terrible baseball, Padres are favored. And since you won the Fantabulous Game Show today, I say anything's possible. That and the fact that I'm, you know, rearranging my busy schedule to go to the game tonight.
Oh.
To help them get out of their slump.
Oh, you. Okay.
So I'll take the Padres minus 1.5. Who do you got?
I hope that they win.
But you're going to.
But
bet
I don't
the
know
Reds.
That they win by 2 or more. So I'm going to say
bet
the Reds.
All right. If you think tonight's game is kind of tough to watch, you could be in Miami, where tonight the Rockies and Marlins face off.
Ooh,
in a matchup of, the Marlins are favored. I guess somebody's got to be favored.
Yeah.
By 1.5. Scraby, you're first.
I'll go with the Marlins at home.
Going to take the Marlins. The Rockies are a mess. I'll take the Rockies. Why not? Nick Martinez faces his old mates, the Padres, tonight. Over under 3.5 strikeouts for Nick Martinez. God, the way Lodolo was striking guys out last night, I got to believe he'll go over. The only way he'll go under is if the Padres can knock him out of the game early. The Padres haven't been knocking anybody out of the game early. I'll say over. 3.5 strikeouts, Nick Martinez. Scrappy.
I don't know this to be true at all, but I got to think these guys know what Nick Martinez is going to be bringing, so I'm going to say under.
They're going to be ready for him, you say.
Yes.
Yankees and Orioles last night. The Orioles won 2-0. Gunnar Henderson scored the second run. This guy's an AL MVP candidate for sure. Tonight, the over-under for these two stalwart teams is 9 runs. Scrape. Do the bats come alive tonight in Baltimore?
Baltimore. I think it's Dean Kremer?
Oh, Kramer?
Nestor Cortez. I'm going to go over.
Yeah, 9 runs. I think they're going to go over. They took the night off last night. NBA, we've got Cleveland and Orlando. Series is tied at 2.
Didn't even know they were still playing.
And they don't. You know what? Nobody does, because they put all the games of this series on NBA TV.
Where like no one knows where they are.
Right. You have to be like a serious fan to be following the series. Game 5, Cleveland favored by 5. The home team has won each game by like 20. I don't think that changes. Cleveland blows them out to win game five. Scraby?
Couldn't even give you a name of anybody on the Magic, so I will say Cleveland.
Really? Can't give me Paolo Banchero.
Yes, I can.
You can give me that.
Yes, yes.
That's about as good as I can do. Indiana and Milwaukee, 217 points tonight. I don't know. Giannis isn't playing. Lillard's not playing. Yeah. I mean, the Bucks are just, I mean, I don't know. They're at home. They're at home, though. The Bucks keep it alive. I don't know. That's not the bet. It's 217 points.
I'm going to go under.
I'm going to go over. Indiana scores a lot of points. And the Bucks will have to score a lot to keep track. And tonight, the Boston Bruins look to eliminate the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Leaves.
Or as you like to call them, the Maple Leaves.
Yes.
Boston is up 3-1. They're favored by 1.5 goal. Game is at the Boston TD Garden. You like the Leaves?
I'm going to go with the Leaves.
You're going to go with Toronto? You're wrong. Boston.
You're wrong.
All right, that's our Daily Gambit. When we come back, Mark Ziegler joins us. A lot going on with San Diego State basketball. Lamont Butler has gone. Micah Parrish is gone, but not without some parting words. And now it looks like we're going to lose Elijah Saunders as well. What's next for the Aztec basketball program? Mark Ziegler clues us in when we come back. All right, Padres and Reds tonight. Game two of a 3-game series. Fingers crossed. Padres snap a 5-game losing streak tonight. Yu Darvish returns from the injured list to make the start for the Friars tonight. Still looking for his first win of the season, as is his mound opponent tonight, former Padre Nick Martinez. You know what I remember about Nick Martinez? A lot of things, but here's one thing that stands out to me, Scrabe.
Okay.
At least when we interviewed him, spring training a couple of years ago, things may have changed since, but at the time, the man was addicted to Red Bull.
Oh, that's right.
And he just was a bundle of energy.
Yes, he was.
At all times. How much energy do you think he'll have tonight pitching in Petco Park against his former team?
A lot.
Yeah. Nick Martinez may be going a little crazy out there on the mound tonight. He'll be jacked up.
I don't know that there's any, like, ill will.
Oh, no. No, but whenever, I don't care if there's ill will or even if you're friends, they're still, it's still your old teammates.
Course. You want to stick it to them because that's just what you do.
Right.
Because
you know these guys well. You want to pitch well. And, you know, the Padres need to get it turned around. I'm calling on three guys. They're all pretty good players on paper, but they're not doing a hill of beans at the moment. I need Fernando. I need Machado. I need Bogey. Driving some balls against or over walls tonight. You know, it's nice to rely on the bottom of your order, Jackson Merrill and Camposano and, you know, Profar at the top now. Tyler Wade's in there this evening. But you got to get your big boys. Your big boys have to get you out of this slump. They got to take it upon themselves to get the Padres out of this slump. We'll see if they can do it. A little bit later on this evening, one other quick baseball note I had for everybody. Jose Abreu officially released by the Astros. Not released. What did they? They DFA'd him to the spring training. The guy's the American League MVP in 2020.
He's 2020 making, becomes a really funny year because
yeah,
all these guys.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. But he's making $60 million. They've sent him to their spring training facility. He's 37 years old. He's going to go down to West Palm Beach, Florida, see if he can.
Ugh. So, talk about looking at yourself in the mirror and see if you want to go forward with
talk
your career.
About, you know, talk about whether or not the Padres should have gone all in for him.
Thankfully, they didn't.
All right, let's get to our interview with Mark Ziegler. We're talking a little Aztec basketball. What's happened? What's going to be happening as the NIL continues to rule college sports after we check traffic? And indeed, we are visiting with Mark Ziegler from the San Diego Union-Tribune. Joins us frequently, and we always enjoy his visits here on Gwen and Chris. And Mark, obviously the Aztecs and their fans, another little bit of a blow here coming up with Elijah Saunders entering the transfer portal. Let's break this down a little bit because Micah Parrish tweeted something out and he was referring to the people who follow San Diego State and saying, hey, we're going to have to, you guys, talking to the fan base, the boosters, are going to have to get with it in a sense to keep up with the Joneses around the country in terms of the kind of money that these kids are being offered to play basketball. Is Micah Parrish fairly accurate with what he's saying here?
I mean, yes and no. Yeah, there's no doubt San Diego State is behind, but it's kind of like, who are they behind? And this is sort of the eternal question with San Diego State. I think there's a little bit of a identity crisis with the athletic program in the sense that, you know, it almost was a power conference program, but now it's not. And it's the best of the mid-majors or the group of five. But that gap between power conferences and group of five is growing financially. And so if they want to keep up with the big boys in, you know, the types of teams that were also in the Sweet 16, yeah, they're going to have to, they're going to need a lot more than they have right now, like triple what they have right now. But that said, you know, what is their place? If they just want to be one of the top teams in the Mountain West, they might not need that much.
Mark, is there direction on that? You said identity crisis. Obviously, things are changing at a pretty rapid rate, and I think I understand in some ways schools taking some time to kind of figure out where and who they want to be. How is there some direction in terms of where at least the program wants to go?
Well, look, there was a lot of direction, and everything was leading to joining the Pac-12, and the budget was growing. They built a football stadium. You know, the basketball program is certainly that caliber or above. But, you know, all of a sudden you get the rug pulled out from under you and you're still in the Mountain West. And now you've got all these expenses. You know, the big difference between San Diego State and Power Conference schools is it's very simple. It's just the TV revenue, right? And what that does is it allows Power Conference schools to operate without a lot of student fees or no student fees and without a lot of institutional support. San Diego State relies on both those heavily. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the subsidies, the subsidizing, you know, when you count donations, it's over half the annual budget. And that's not a way to run a business, but that's the way business is run in the group of five and at mid-majors. And so that's who they are. That's what the budget says San Diego State is. But what their basketball team says they are is something much greater. And that's where you're starting to see this difference in and if you want to call it an identity crisis, I don't know if that's totally fair, but there's two differences there, if that makes any sense.
I thought that you said identity crisis. I'm sorry.
No, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's crazy right now, Mark. And I guess the question I have is this going to continue down this road in college basketball, maybe, you know, college sports overall? Is there any push for somebody to try and get some of the toothpaste back in the tube, which we know is almost impossible to do?
Well, the other thing that's going on is you have this lawsuit behind the scenes that I think the NCAA or the power conferences are resigned to losing, and they're going to try to settle. And they can settle with a chunk of cash, and they're looking at like $1 billion, or they can settle it in a creative way that would create almost like a salary cap, a revenue sharing system with athletes. And the numbers are being thrown out right now is $20 million per school to share with your athletes. And that's not necessarily only your basketball players, your football players, but some of your other athletes on campus as well. And so, you know, that would further separate and partition Division I into the haves and the have-nots, because obviously mid-major programs and group of five programs are not going to be able to afford that. They're really not affording what they're paying right now because they're so heavily subsidized. So, you know, getting the toothpaste back in the tube, I don't know. I think you've almost got to go the other direction and just start paying athletes and signing them to contracts and then getting money on the back end when they go to the NBA or the NFL, where it's what happens in Europe. You sign a young soccer player, you have them in your club, and if a bigger club wants them, you know, you got to pay for them. You got to pay a transfer fee, and that's how you make money. So I think that may be ultimately where we're headed.
Mark Ziegler joins us here, Union Tribune. And Mark, I mean, you kind of poked a hole in my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is it the basketball program as we see it now sustainable without a move like that?
Well, it might be. And the one thing you have to understand is San Diego State is the outlier. You look at the Sweet 16 this year, and there were two non-power conference programs in it. One's Gonzaga, and they're really a power conference with the amount of money and the amount of NIL and pedigree and all that. And then you have San Diego State, which still doesn't charter and doesn't have a ton of NIL, still made it. And Brian Dutcher, I almost compare them. I was telling one of the assistant coaches, I compare you to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. I mean, you figured out a way with a small salary to win. And, they don't rely on metrics, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But they found a way with culture, with coaching, with this team-first attitude, with defense, with home court advantage. They found a way to win without all the big money players. Now, it's going to be really tested. So I think it's unfair to say, oh, this is the end of the program. But it's going to be really tested. And one of the things where it's going to be tested is what teams are doing is they're just getting old, staying old. And that was San Diego State's, secret sauce the last few years. When you look at who they put on the floor in the national championship game and how old those guys were. Well, next year's team is going to be really, really young. Doesn't mean they're not talented. In many ways, they might be more talented in terms of raw potential. They have some really good players. But they're going to be guys who've never played a game of college basketball are going to be in the rotation on opening night. And there's going to be two, three, guys like that. And that's just going to be the new normal, I think. And they're going to have to win with younger players. Now, can they do it? I don't know. We're going to find out. But they've adjusted before, and you'd think that they might be able to do it again.
Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune. It's off-season for Aztec basketball, but there is no such thing as off-season anymore, as we're finding out. Mark, the coaching situation, we know Chris Acker has left to go to Long Beach State. There's been some other talk about, Velasquez and some of these other guys. Justin Hudson, in the meantime, left Fresno State. I don't know how specific we can be, but, has there been any contact there? Do we know if there's any interest in bringing him or trying to get him to come back? Or does he go to look elsewhere? Is that a possibility?
Well, I think there's been some conversations, certainly. I mean, they all know each other really well, and obviously we know that he's not coaching at Fresno State. But if you look at Brian Dutcher's track record in hiring assistants, he's always hired outside the family in recent years, kind of bringing in new blood, new way of thinking, because that's healthy in an organization, and it's worked before. I mean, J.D. Luster's a great hire. Chris Acker was a great hire. Jay Morris, before him, really good hire. And so my sense is that's what's going to happen here. And I don't think it's any affront to Justin. Obviously, he's a really, really good coach. But I just think that's kind of the direction that he's gone, and it's worked in the past. And so that's my feel. The thing with any hire in California, any government hire or the Cal State system, is there's so many bureaucratic hoops you have to jump through, interviews, processes. So I think they have their sights set on a few guys. And now they're just dotting the I's and crossing the T's. I think we'll probably hear something in the next week or two.
Mark, obviously recently Elijah signed to the portal, and it seemed to be a surprise the most. I mean, was it a surprise around the program? Did they see this coming?
Oh, 100%. I mean, last week the guy hosted a recruit because he was our go-to guy when recruits came into town and parents and families and their campus visits. He was the go-to guy. He was their preferred host because he's such a great ambassador for the program. I mean, he would talk to them about, yeah, there's NIL out there, but this is the best place to be. It's the best program. It's comfortable. With winning mentality, we don't celebrate just mediocre wins. We strive to win the whole thing, and all this stuff that really appealed to players. And for that guy all of a sudden to walk to their offices and say that he wants to transfer and he's going to transfer, I think was a shock. But the one thing I will say is, it's easy to look at this and say, well, this is all about money. And Lamont Butler Sr. did say that. He said it was a business decision. We sacrificed financially that last year. We're not going to do it this year. But that was a COVID year, and you can make the argument that, in the past, kids gave 4 years and they were gone. This is a bonus year, and some fans think a kid should remain loyal to school. Others say, look, that's your free year. Go make money. You gave us 4 years. And I think that was sort of the thought with him. And then with the other guys, I wouldn't be so sure, and I'm not going to point fingers at certain players, but that some were not pushed out. Not pushed is probably too strong of a word, but you know, they just felt like it just wasn't the right match, and maybe it's time to move on. And so I don't think it's always about money. I think Elijah's situation is pretty complicated behind the scenes, and I won't go into details, but there's some other factors there. But even given those factors, it was still a shock, I think, that he's leaving. But the fact that, you know, the NIL collective doesn't have, you know, $2, $3 million, $4 million in a war chest, I don't think was as much a factor as a lot of people think it was. I think it's part of it, but, you know, I think, and I haven't seen Micah's tweet, but I don't think it's as much as maybe some people are leading you to believe.
Mark, we've touched on this in the past. My last question today, women's college basketball and what they accomplished and the eyeballs that were on some of these games in the NCAA tournament, and Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and South Carolina's undefeated season, UConn and Paige Beckers and ratings that were bigger than the men's games. Is this a one-off, or is women's college basketball have a chance to jump aboard this train and really make the sport more mainstream than it already is?
Oh, I definitely think the latter. I mean, I think this is great for the sport. And, you know, obviously the next step is not for just people to go watch the big stars, but to go watch San Diego State women play. And they've had some really, you know, last few years, they've really improved the program. Stacy's turned the corner. They're playing good basketball. They're competitive. They're competing in the conference tournament. And so the question for me is, okay, it's easy to root for Caitlin Clark for a number of reasons. And it's easy to root for Angel and Juju and Paige. But let's see if you could root for your local team. And I think that's the next step. And I think it might even be a bigger hurdle. But I think this is a step, and maybe there'll be some trickle down. You know, now that, I mean, obviously Caitlin's gone, so we'll see how much of a hit that takes. But that's what I'd like to see happen. People start to embrace it. You know, it's not ever going to be like the men right away, but, you know, maybe get a few hundred more fans or a couple thousand more fans on a regular basis to games. And I think that generates excitement. It's kind of like fire and creating its own wind to create more fire. I think that's what happens. You get more fans in the stands, and that creates more excitement, and that gets more fans back. So I think there's a potential to be there, but we'll see.
All right, Mark, always great chatting with you. When is your when are you shoving off for Olympic stuff? You got to be coming up soon.
Yeah, well, it's they start the last weekend in July, but there's a lot of stuff before that, a lot of trials, we got so many athletes from San Diego who are to train here. I just went to the Olympic Media Summit in New York, where they bring all the athletes to one place, all the media to one place, and you sit down for 3 days and just sort of speed date. It's really helpful. I mean, I just love the Olympics because I love the stories, and I love interviewing the athletes because they're all overachievers. They're all really educated. They're all real thoughtful, and they're not sort of saturated with media, so they love talking to the media too. So it's a cool time. I'm looking forward to it, and it's going to be in Paris, by the way. So complaints for me.
Good for you.
Yeah, Mark Ziegler, the world traveler that he is. We'll try to catch up with you before you head on out. Mark, thanks so much for everything and great insight.
Thanks, Mark.
As always.
Yep, my pleasure. That was great. Talk to you guys.
Yes, sir. Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune with the latest. And the greatest. Mark Ziegler, always informative. That NIL. And indeed, we are visiting with Mark Ziegler from the San Diego Union Tribune. Joins us frequently, and we always enjoy his visits here on Gwen and Chris. And Mark, obviously, the Aztecs and their fans, another little bit of a blow here coming up with Elijah Saunders entering the transfer portal. Let's break this down a little bit, because Micah Parrish tweeted something out, and he was referring to the people who follow San Diego State and saying, hey, we're going to have to, you guys, talking to the fan base, the boosters, are going to have to get with it, in a sense, to keep up with the Joneses around the country in terms of the kind of money that these kids are being offered to play basketball. Is Micah Parrish fairly accurate with what he's saying here?
I mean, yes and no. There's no doubt San Diego State is behind, but it's kind of like, who are they behind? And this is sort of the eternal question with San Diego State. I think there's a little bit of a identity crisis with the athletic program in the sense that, you know, it almost was a power conference program, but now it's not. And it's the best of the mid-majors or the group of five. But that gap between power conferences and group of five is growing financially. And so if they want to keep up with the big boys in, you know, the types of teams that were also in the Sweet 16, yeah, they're going to have to, they're going to need a lot more than they have right now, like triple what they have right now. That said, you know, what is their place? If they just want to be one of the top teams in the Mountain West, they might not need that much.
Mark, is there direction on that? You said identity crisis. Obviously, things are changing at a pretty rapid rate. And I think I understand in some ways schools taking some time to kind of figure out where and who they want to be. How is there some direction in terms of where at least the program wants to go?
Well, look, there was a lot of direction, and everything was leading to joining the Pac-12. And the budget was growing. They built a football stadium. You know, the basketball program is certainly that caliber or above. But, you know, all of a sudden you get the rug pulled out from under you, and you're still in the Mountain West. And now you've got all these expenses. You know, the big difference between San Diego State and Power Conference schools is it's very simple. It's just it's the TV revenue, right? And what that does is it allows Power Conference schools to operate without a lot of student fees or no student fees and without a lot of institutional support. San Diego State relies on both those heavily. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the subsidies, the subsidizing, you know, when you count donations, it's over half the annual budget. And that's not a way to run a business, but that's the way business is run in the group of five and at mid-majors. And so that's who they are. That's what the budget says San Diego State is. But what their basketball team says they are is something much greater. And that's where you're starting to see this difference in, and if you want to call it an identity crisis, I don't know if that's totally fair, but there's two differences there, if that makes any sense.
I thought that you said identity crisis. I'm sorry.
No,
yeah, it's, you know, it's crazy right now, Mark. And I guess the question I have is this going to continue down this road in college basketball, maybe, you know, college sports overall? Is there any push for somebody to try and get some of the toothpaste back in the tube, which we know is almost impossible to do?
Well, the other thing that's going on is you have this lawsuit behind the scenes that I think the NCAA or the power conferences are resigned to losing, and they're going to try to settle. And they can settle with a chunk of cash, and they're looking at like $1 billion. Or they can settle it in a creative way that would create almost like a salary cap, a revenue sharing system with athletes. And the numbers are being thrown out right now is $20 million per school to share with your athletes. And that's not necessarily only your basketball players, your football players, but some of your other athletes on campus as well. And so, you know, that would further separate and partition Division I into the haves and the have-nots, because obviously mid-major programs and group of five programs are not going to be able to afford that. They're really not affording what they're paying right now because they're so heavily subsidized. So, you know, getting the toothpaste back in the tube, I don't know. I think you've almost got to go the other direction and just start paying athletes and signing them to contracts and then getting money on the back end when they go to the NBA or the NFL, where it's what happens in Europe. You sign a young soccer player, you have them in your club, and if a bigger club wants them, you know, you got to pay for them. You got to pay a transfer fee, and that's how you make money. So I think that may be ultimately where we're headed.
Mark Ziegler joins us here, Union Tribune. And Mark, you kind of poked a hole in my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is it the basketball program as we see it now sustainable without a move like that?
Well, it might be. And the one thing you have to understand is San Diego State is the outlier. You look at the Sweet 16 this year, and there were two non-power conference programs in it. One's Gonzaga, and they're really a power conference with the amount of money and the amount of NIL and, you know, pedigree and all that. And then you have San Diego State, which still doesn't charter and doesn't have a ton of NIL, still made it. And Brian Dutcher, I almost compare them. I was telling one of the assistant coaches, I compare you to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. I mean, you figured out a way with a small salary to win. And, you know, they don't rely on metrics, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But they've found a way with culture, with coaching, with this team-first attitude, with defense, you know, with home court advantage. You know, they found a way to win without all the big money players. Now, it's going to be really tested. So I think it's unfair to say, oh, this is the end of the program. But it's going to be really tested. And one of the things where it's going to be tested is what teams are doing is they're just getting old, staying old. And that was San Diego State's, you know, secret sauce the last few years. When you look at who they put on the floor in the national championship game and how old those guys were. Well, next year's team is going to be really, really young. Doesn't mean they're not talented. In many ways, they might be more talented in terms of raw potential. They have some really good players. But they're going to be guys who've never played a game of college basketball are going to be in the rotation on opening night. And there's going to be two, three, you know, guys like that. And that's just going to be the new normal, I think. And they're going to have to win with younger players. Now, can they do it? I don't know. We're going to find out. But they've adjusted before, and you'd think that they might be able to do it again.
Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune. It's off-season for Aztec basketball, but there is no such thing as off-season anymore, as we're finding out. Mark, the coaching situation, we know Chris Acker has left to go to Long Beach State. There's been some other talk about, you know, Velasquez and some of these other guys. Justin Hudson, in the meantime, left Fresno State. I don't know how specific we can be, but, I mean, has there been any contact there? Do we know if there's any interest in bringing him or trying to get him to come back? Or does he go to look elsewhere? Is that a possibility?
Well, I think there's been some conversations, certainly. I mean, you know, they all know each other really well, and obviously we know that he's not coaching at Fresno State. But if you look at Brian Dutcher's track record in hiring assistants, he's always hired outside the family in recent years, kind of bringing in new blood, new way of thinking, because that's healthy in an organization, and it's worked before. I mean, you know, J.D. Luster's a great hire. Chris Acker was a great hire. You know, Jay Morris, before him, really good hire. And so my sense is that's what's going to happen here. And I don't think it's any affront to Justin. Obviously, he's a really, really good coach. But I just think that's kind of the direction that he's gone, and it's worked in the past. And so that's my feel. You know, the thing with any hire in California, any government hire or the Cal State system, is there's so many bureaucratic hoops you have to jump through, interviews, processes. So I think they have their sights set on a few guys. And now they're just dotting the I's and crossing the T's. I think we'll probably hear something in the next week or two.
Mark, obviously recently Elijah signed to the portal, and it seemed to be a surprise the most. I mean, was it a surprise around the program? Did they see this coming?
Oh, 100%. I mean, last week the guy hosted a recruit because he was their go-to guy when recruits came into town and parents and families and their campus visits. He was the go-to guy. He was their preferred host because he's such a great ambassador for the program. I mean, he would talk to them about, yeah, there's NIL out there, but this is the best place to be. It's the best program. It's comfortable. You know, with winning mentality, we don't celebrate just mediocre wins. We strive to win the whole thing, and you know, all this stuff that really appealed to players. And for that guy all of a sudden to walk to their offices and say that he wants to transfer and he's going to transfer, I think was a shock. But the one thing I will say is, you know, it's easy to look at this and say, well, this is all about money. And Lamont Butler Sr. did say that. He said it was a business decision. We sacrificed financially that last year. We're not going to do it this year. But that was a COVID year, and you can make the argument that, you know, in the past, kids gave 4 years and they were gone. This is a bonus year, and some fans think a kid should remain loyal to school. Others say, look, that's your free year. Go make money. You gave us 4 years. And I think that was sort of the thought with him. And then with the other guys, I mean, I wouldn't be so sure, and I'm not going to point fingers at certain players, but that some were not pushed out. Not pushed is probably too strong of a word, but, you know, they just felt like it just wasn't the right match, and maybe it's time to move on. And so I don't think it's always about money. I think Elijah's situation is pretty complicated behind the scenes, and I won't go into details, but there's some other factors there. But even given those factors, it was still a shock, I think, that he's leaving. But the fact that, you know, the NIL collective doesn't have, you know, $2-3 million, $4 million in a war chest, I don't think was as much a factor as a lot of people think it was. I think it's part of it. But, you know, I think, and I haven't seen Micah's tweet, but I don't think it's, as much as maybe some people are leading you to believe.
Mark, we've touched on this in the past. My last question today, women's college basketball and what they accomplished and the eyeballs that were on some of these games in the NCAA tournament, and Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and South Carolina's undefeated season, UConn and Paige Beckers and ratings that were bigger than the men's games. Is this a one-off, or is women's college basketball have a chance to jump aboard this train and really make the sport more mainstream than it already is?
Oh, I definitely think the latter. I mean, I think this is great for the sport. And, you know, obviously the next step is not for just people to go watch the big stars, but to go watch San Diego State women play. And they've had some really, you know, last few years, they've really improved the program. Stacy's turned the corner. They're playing good basketball. They're competitive. They're competing in the conference tournament. And so the question for me is, okay, it's easy to root for Caitlin Clark for a number of reasons. And it's easy to root for Angel and Juju and Paige. But let's see if you can root for your local team. And I think that's the next step. And I think it might even be a bigger hurdle. But I think this is a step, and maybe there'll be some trickle down. You know, now that, I mean, obviously Caitlin's gone, so we'll see how much of a hit that takes. But that's what I'd like to see happen. People start to embrace it. You know, it's not ever going to be like the men right away, but, you know, maybe get a few hundred more fans or a couple thousand more fans on a regular basis to games, and I think that generates excitement. It's kind of like fire and creating its own wind to create more fire. I think that's what happens. You get more fans in the stands, and that creates more excitement, and that gets more fans back. So I think there's a potential to be there, but we'll see.
All right, Mark, always great chatting with you. When are you shoving off for Olympic stuff? You got to be coming up soon.
Yeah, well, they start the last weekend in July, but there's a lot of stuff before that, a lot of trials, we got so many athletes from San Diego who are to train here. I just went to the Olympic Media Summit in New York, where they bring all the athletes to one place, all the media to one place, and you sit down for 3 days and just sort of speed date. And it's really helpful. I mean, I just love the Olympics because I love the stories, and I love interviewing the athletes because they're all overachievers. They're all really educated. They're all real thoughtful, and they're not sort of saturated with media, so they love talking to the media too. So it's a cool time. I'm looking forward to it, and it's going to be in Paris, by the way. So complaints for me.
Good for you.
Yeah, Mark Ziegler, the world traveler that he is. We'll try to catch up with you before you head on out. Mark, thanks so much for everything and great insight.
Thanks, Mark.
As always.
Yep, my pleasure. That was great. Talk to you guys.
Yes, sir. Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune, with the latest. And the greatest, Mark Ziegler, always informative. That NIL, too bad. Scrappy.
What?
They didn't have that back in the day and age when you and I were starring as college Division I athletes.
I was the best Edward 40 hands guy on the team.
I wonder what they would have paid a 10th string left-handed pitcher on the San Diego State baseball team.
Well, you would have been making some sort of living off of it.
Never know now. All right, when we come back, Chris versus the fans. You can play some trivia. You can go to Las Vegas. 833-288-0973. That's next.